unraveled, I found myself still captivated by her. Karina had a way of putting me in a trance. It was something I had never experienced in my lifetime, and I had been through a lot. "You what?" I finally asked after a couple more seconds of silence, trying my damnedest to be in the present and to stop fantasizing about the past. She broke eye contact. I don't know, she admitted with a shrug. I feel like I'm not mad at you right now, and I'm trying to figure out why that is. It's confusing me, like I should be so pissed. I shouldn't want to be around you, especially not alone and thinking. She paused and stared at the ground. What am I even saying? I studied her. I don't know. What are you saying, Karina? With hesitation, she exhaled the night air. I missed you, I guess. She looked toward the trees. And since I don't want to be stupid and say anything I'll regret, I'm going to go back to the group now, have another drink, and try to forget what I just said. Can you do the same? I shook my head. Not a chance. Kale, she sighed. Karina, I gently touched her elbow over the blanket. This might be the last time we're together like this, and I'd much rather those be your last words to me than what you said earlier. I assumed for a moment that she was as lost in thought as I was, but her eye roll said otherwise. You're seriously still annoyed about what I said in the truck? I was just speaking the truth. We technically didn't date. We spent every moment that we could together. We shared parts of ourselves that we hadn't before. What exactly is dating to you, Karina, if that's not it? But you never asked me to be your girlfriend, technically, she insisted. I lifted my body up to sit in the bed of my truck. My sneakered feet dangled above the ground. Do people still do that? Ask someone to be their girlfriend or boyfriend? She looked uncertain, like I had caught her in a trap. She knew she was being petty, but I could tell by her body language and from our history that she was going to stick to her guns on this, even if it was immature and ridiculous. I was also being immature and ridiculous, in hopes of having just a little more of her time and attention. This time with Karina was feeding something in me that I hadn't realized was starving. Some people do. Romantic ones, anyway. Plus, if we were dating, it would have been worse that you lied to me. You realize that, right? There it was. I knew it was coming. Yeah, I couldn't disagree with her. She was right, and I wasn't going to gaslight her or try to manipulate the truth. Good, she huffed, crossing her arms under the tan wool blanket. At least you know. I sat, and she stood in silence for a few moments. She hadn't run off yet, which was all I could ask for. I knew there was nothing I could do to change what had happened, but fuck, the possibility of this weekend really being the last time we would spend time together, even if I hadn't expected her to speak to me, was the only reason I'd agreed to come on this nightmare of a trip in the first place. Can you do me a favor? One I don't deserve, but for the sake of potential regret haunting both of us? Her face was pinched with skepticism, but her silence encouraged me to keep talking. Would it be possible for us to try to pretend that the last few weeks didn't happen? Like I'm not the person who fucked you over? If you say no, I get it. But let me guess. It's the last time we'll see each other? She said in a deepened tone that I guessed was supposed to be mocking mine. I nodded. You know what? Let's do that. Her agreement shocked me. I wanted to be sure she actually meant it. Really? Yeah, really. Mostly because I really can't stand any more tension or drama or stress. And I'm already stressed enough being here and not knowing anyone. I don't want to hold on to my anger. I can feel it sitting there inside of me, and I really, really can't handle it right now. I'm still not okay with what happened, and I will never understand why my brother did what he did, or why you went along with it. But I've decided that since it's done and I can't fix it or change it, I'm going to have to accept it. I'll never forgive you, but I can pretend to for the next 48 hours. Processing her words, The amount of nevers she used stuck to me, but I needed to take what she was offering, and she was right. She would never understand why I did what I did, even though it was for her. I had resigned myself to being the villain, and in a plot twist, I was now getting a free pass for 48 hours. It felt too good to be true, but I'd take it. Even a few hours would suffice, and the time was ticking for us, for me. Deal then? I reached my hand out for her to shake. Her hand slid out of the opening of the blanket wrapped around her.
Deal.
Karina lifted her body onto the back of my truck and sat next to me. As she surveyed the inside, seats down and covered with blankets, her eyes went wide.
Whoa, you've got everything here.
She picked up my charging port and turned it around in her hands. It was a thick black and orange box with a charge that lasted for days.
This looks intense.
She put it down and I watched her glance from the outlet to my laptop and to the white screen hung up against the window.
Is that a projector screen?
She asked, a voice like she had just found a pile of diamonds. I nodded. Didn't want to be bored out here.
This isn't the same truck I rode here in. It looks like the setup for a date. The lights, the screen.
There was a sarcastic tone to her voice that was almost an accusation. Nah, no way. Who would I be dating out here anyway? I had to ask. Karina's nose scrunched up and I knew she didn't want to admit even an ounce of the jealousy she was clearly feeling.
You know who?
A small laugh shook my shoulders. God, this woman was infuriating, but so damn charming. She practically hated me now, but her jealousy made me happy, as fucked up as that was. The only person I have any desire to date is you. She jerked her head toward me so quickly, I thought it might pop off.
Shush, don't say stuff like that.
I shrugged. You brought it up. I was like an attention-deprived child, causing distraction just to get a rise out of her. She rolled her eyes again and didn't give me the satisfaction I was craving.
So if you're not planning on spending a romantic night in the back of your truck, then what's with all this?
I shook my head. I have this stuff lying around. I use it to keep myself entertained. No romance involved.
Why don't you just hang out and drink with everyone then? Isn't this supposed to be one last hurrah for my brother anyway?
I rubbed my hand over my leg. It wasn't hurting for once. But I guess I had formed a habit. I see your brother every day. Lucky me, I replied. Someone has to be sober when there are so many variables. We both looked toward the noise coming from the campsite. Hollering, laughing, the ruckus was getting louder by the minute.
You're the one who decided to take my brother in.
Touché.
But you're right about the drinking. I kept worrying about what might happen out here. But then I drank tequila and beer and more beer. I was pretty buzzed, but now it's wearing off.
Yikes. That's a very direct way of calling me a buzzkill, I teased. Her smile grew and she shook her head.
Not what I meant, she said,
a few pieces of hair falling out of the clip and onto her cheeks. It was hard not to reach over and tuck them behind her ears. Her hair looked so soft and my mind remembered way too clearly how it smelled like vanilla and soap. It was more smooth than usual, which was weird, considering we were in the humid Georgia woods. She always looked beautiful, but I preferred when her strands were wild and unruly, like her mind and spirit. She caught me staring at her, but it wasn't as awkward as it should have been. She stared back at me, and it felt like neither of us knew what to say. I was afraid of pissing her off and dredging up the past, so I waited for her to make the next move. She shivered and tried to cover her legs with the blanket. Please tell me you have more clothes in your bag. It's going to be warm during the days, but freezing at night.
Your truck has been holding my bag hostage, and I forgot to bring a hoodie, she sighed.
You can have mine. I began to take it off before she could stop me. My body always ran hot, and with not one but two portable heaters aboard, I had no intention of leaving the truck. She must have been really damn cold and put my hoodie on without an argument. You can take one of my heaters with you to your and
Elodie's tent when you get settled there. As much as I didn't want Elodie's pregnant body to be cold, I was much more concerned about Karina. She was chronically cold, and I cut myself some slack for putting my friend's pregnant wife second. Elodie seemed well enough taken care of since Fisher had appointed himself in charge of her lately.
Why are you being so nice to me?
Karina's voice was cautious and soft. What? I'm always nice to you. I stopped mid-sentence. At least I try to be. Her eyes left mine and landed on her crossed legs where the blanket was. My white hoodie was too long on her arms, but she already seemed warmer and more comfortable than she had a few minutes ago.
Well, I guess I better get back to the party. Elodie is probably wondering where I am, she said,
making me wish I would have started a better conversation. Doesn't seem like we're missing out on much. In the distance, I could see Mendoza and Gloria hugging, Elodie sitting in a chair with a sleeping bag wrapped around her body, and Fisher standing next to her like a guard dog. There weren't many other campers around us, and for their sake, I was glad. The fewer people, the less chance of something going down.
What were you going to watch on that thing?
Karina pointed to my mini projector. It was a little bit bigger than my hand, and I'd gotten it on Amazon before my last field training. It came in handy when we were out in the middle of nowhere in Louisiana with no cell service and no Wi-Fi. I ended up being the hero with downloaded episodes of Breaking Bad that we projected onto the side of the Humvee during our downtime. I shrugged. Not sure. I downloaded some episodes of Arrested Development.
Random?
Karina laughed a little and repositioned her body, perching herself a few feet closer to me. I needed some nostalgic comedy to balance my life out.
Is Game of Thrones too full of murder and rape for you?
She raised her brows. I knew she meant it to be funny, but she, as always, was dead on. I nodded. Actually, yeah. Yeah, it is. Even in the dim light of the rear of my truck, I could see the flush across her cheeks. She lifted her hands up and the long sleeves of the hoodie fell down a bit.
I'm sorry. I was joking, but it wasn't funny. I didn't mean to.
Her index finger slid over her thumbnail again and again, an anxious tick she had. I reached over and put my hand on hers to calm them out of habit. She didn't move away, sighing, and her hands remained under mine. It's fine, really. Looking down at both of our hands, I smiled a bit. Is this fine? I asked her, clearly talking about the fact that we were touching for the first time in weeks, and it felt like years. Even though she had agreed to let bygones be bygones for the weekend, and I was slightly taking advantage of that, I wanted to make sure she was okay with me touching her. I was a fuck-up when it came to Karina, but I respected her consent above all. Karina nodded.
Do you think it will ever go away? Your memories, I mean. Will you always suffer?
Her voice was sad. My first reaction was to laugh it off or downplay it, because I didn't want her pity. But there wasn't any in her voice, only genuine worry. She was one of the only people who wasn't blood-related to me who worried about me. My battle buddies did in their own way during deployment, but mostly to keep the body count down. Honestly, I think it will always be like this. Not being able to watch violent shows, play certain video games, see the fireworks on the 4th of July, relax by a burning fire. I'll likely never get a good night's sleep, not without you at least. And I... The warmth of Karina's mouth silenced mine. The surprise of her sudden affection would have knocked me over if I hadn't been sitting down. I let the undeniable physical pull between us completely take over. Wrapping both of my hands around her waist, I pulled her onto my lap as her hungry mouth tasted and teased mine. Every nerve in my body, from my nose touching hers, to every vertebrae of my spine as we lay back, to my hips pressed against hers, was wildly alert. I threaded my fingers through her hair, unclipping it, and felt her soft curls fall across my cheeks and neck. She began to rock her body slowly against the hardness of my cock. Confusion and longing wrapped around her name as our breaths became one. She brought her hands to my face, touching me as if to make sure I was really there. There was a slight tremor to her touch that excited me as she traced my jawline and down the base of my throat. I gasped, and she groaned, swallowing my sounds. There was no way of knowing how far this would go. It was completely up to her. I kissed her with intention, knowing that I didn't want to be soft if this really might be the last time, while thanking whatever God there was for gifting me this second chance. Karina's hands reached under my t-shirt, and she dug her fingernails into my skin.
"Touch me," she whispered into my open mouth. "Kale, touch me."
I gripped her ass with both palms as she started undressing herself. She lifted the hoodie off first, then her shirt, and I kissed down her neck, across her chest as she pulled at my t-shirt to take it off. I pressed Karina's soft body against me and used my upper body strength to flip us over gently, hovering above her as her mouth sucked at the bare skin on my shoulder. I wanted to tear the rest of the clothes off her body and bury myself in her. I had completely forgotten where the hell we were, who was around, or what fucking planet we were on. Her thighs wrapped around my lower back, and she lifted her hips, whining and biting down on my skin. "Do you?" I began to ask her, but couldn't finish the sentence because her hand reached into my sweats and gripped my cock. She moved slowly, pumping me while nodding.
"Can you close the back?"
she asked me. I nodded, desperate to keep her hand on me, but knew we needed the privacy. She was panting, pulling her jeans off, as I lifted the latch on the back of my truck and tapped the lights off one by one. I glanced over to the campfire to make sure no one could see us. Not that I gave a fuck, but for her sake. I was only a few inches away from her body lying across the back of my truck bed when she grabbed a hold of me, her strength surprising me. Her hands were no longer on shore as she took my boxers down, pushing my pants out of the way. She was vibrant and needy and was making me dizzy in the best fucking way. Karina hooked her finger through the dog tags dangling from my neck and pulled me to kiss her. Her panties were soaked, and I gently stroked my index finger across her, circling the pool of wetness through the thin cotton. Her hips jolted up and I pressed harder, keeping my finger steady, knowing it would make her even more frenzied. Once my fingertip was soaked with her need, I brought it to the small space between our mouths. Before I could taste her, she wrapped her lips around the tip of my finger and sucked gently. I almost came from the boldness of watching her taste herself. I couldn't wait a second longer. I yanked her panties down, pulling them off her thick thighs, and tossed them aside. Her body was warm when it met mine, and my cock twitched as it slid into her, and I held on to her back tightly as it arched with every movement I made. I wanted to fuck her slowly, to savor the whimpers and the feeling of filling her entire being, but it was hard to control myself with Karina. I rocked into her, pulling out, pushing back in, while gently pressing and circling her clit, knowing exactly how to make her come. She bit my shoulder again, this time harder, and I wrapped my hand in her hair, pulling as the pressure in our bodies built and built, losing balance and logic and everything in between as we both came, breathing and cursing one another's names.
Chapter 27. Karina. The rise and fall of my chest matched with Kale's as he rested his head in the curve of my neck. His dog tags were cold, despite how warm his body was, and I could feel his heart pounding against my skin. I wasn't sure how we'd got here, or if it was a horrible idea or not. But something had possessed me to kiss him, to touch him, and to go as far as to hook up with him. In the back of his truck, of all places. I didn't care that Elodie, my brother, and a group of all their friends were close by. I barely thought of them long enough to have Kale close the back of his truck. It was too soon to regret what had just happened, and honestly, I hoped I never did. It felt so good, not just physically, but mentally and emotionally, to be close to him. As if on cue, he lifted his head up to look at me. It was dark, but his eyes were bright and gleaming. He rubbed his nose against mine, and it made me laugh in a childlike way. I loved how free he made me feel, like it was okay to giggle and not worry about being quiet or reserved.
That was, unexpected.
He smiled and kissed the tip of my nose. I nodded my head, agreeing with a matching smile. What even happened? I joked, but was asking the question to myself, really.
I've no clue. That was all you.
Kale leaned up on one elbow and studied my face. I knew him well enough to know he was looking for a sign of panic, regret, anger, but he wouldn't find it. In that moment, I just felt warm and calm and at peace with myself, with him, despite everything we had gone through. It didn't make sense, and I wasn't going to torture myself to break down exactly why I'd kissed Kale in the first place. Deconstructing that would ruin the only happiness I'd felt in weeks. Stopping myself from self-sabotage or ignorance, maybe a bit of both, was bliss. In any case, that was progress. I took a deep breath, and Kale kissed across my cheeks in a soft line. The windows were slightly foggy as I looked up, and his body blanketed mine, so even if someone approached, they wouldn't see me. I didn't care enough to want to move anyway, and I was enjoying the feeling of his warm body on mine. I loved the way he didn't just climb off me after getting what he wanted. Being in such a vulnerable state, and having a man roll over as soon as he came, was the kind of neglectful trauma that made me terrified to be close to anyone. But Kale had never done that, and I couldn't imagine that he ever would. I didn't want to think about the women he had been with before me or would be with after me. Even the brief thought of it made it hard to breathe. I hugged his back tighter, burying my head into his neck.
You okay?
He asked, always able to read my mind. I nodded. I wondered what he was thinking, but didn't want to ask. The silence was so enjoyable that I closed my eyes, focusing only on the present and Kale's breath. It was cut short by a sudden chorus of shouting. Kale's body stiffened immediately, and he lifted himself up onto his knees and wiped his hand across the window to see what was going on.
Motherfucker, he groaned, reaching for his clothes. I had never seen him get dressed so quickly.
What's happening? I pulled my panties up my thighs and yanked my legs through my jeans. I grabbed Kale's hoodie and didn't bother to put my bra back on.
They're about to fight.
His voice was calm, but I could feel his energy shifting into protective peacemaker mode. He brought his hand to my cheek, brushing his thumb across my mouth.
Stay here. I'll be back, but you need to stay in the truck.
He knew damn well I wasn't going to stay in the truck, and he wasn't the least bit surprised when I followed him out and we walked toward the group. Mendoza and another guy called Warren were in each other's faces, both yelling in Spanish. I couldn't remember if I had met him at my brother's party or not, but I knew that he and Mendoza had been laughing together earlier by the campfire. I looked around to clock Elodie and make sure she was away from the chaos, but my brother was a step ahead of me and had his arm around her shoulders as they backed away from the scene. Kale went right in and immediately grabbed Mendoza's arm while Gloria reached for the other. Warren brought his hand down to grab Mendoza, but it landed on Gloria's arm. She yelped at the impact, and before I could blink, Warren was on the ground, Mendoza on top of him. Manny, stop! His wife screamed. Kale grabbed hold of Mendoza's shirt to pull him off, but to no avail.
I'll fucking kill you!
Mendoza yelled, as his fist landed on Warren's jaw. Kale tried again, and this time he had more success, but Mendoza was like a bull, blinded by anger, and he shoved Kale backward, making him trip over a pile of branches. I rushed to Kale's side, but he was already back on his feet and going for Mendoza again. A couple of the guys had joined Kale to break up the fight. The look in Mendoza's eyes as they dragged him away sent a chill down my spine. He was a completely different person right now, his eyes black, mouth twisted, the corner of it dripping with blood.
Gloria was quiet now, a blank expression as she stared at her husband and Kale walking away. The two of them disappeared into the dark woods. Warren got to his feet and stepped toward Gloria. I moved between them without a trace of fear in my body. Kale would have wanted me to.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to touch you. I was trying to get him off me and didn't see you.
Warren held up his hands. It's fine, she said, touching my arm as she spoke. Her hand was ice cold. I could feel it through the thick cotton hoodie. When he repeated his apology, she waved him off. I said it's fine, just go. The resolve in her voice further proved how used to this behavior she was. It made me sad for her, her children, and her husband. You should go, I told Warren, who was holding his jaw. I reached for Gloria's hand and laced my fingers through hers, leading her away from Warren and toward the log we had been hanging out on earlier in the day. It felt like days had passed, with so many changes since the sunset. Where do you think they went? I asked her, nodding toward the woods where Kale and Mendoza had gone.
Hopefully Manny fell into a fucking ditch and got some sense knocked into him.
Gloria leaned forward and grabbed the bottle of tequila from the dirt at our feet. She drank straight from the bottle and wiped her mouth off, hissing as the liquor made its way through her. When she handed it to me, I almost declined, but figured she could use a drinking partner right now. Do you want to talk about what happened? I understand if you don't, I asked, sizing up her comfort level. If she wanted to pretend nothing happened, it wasn't my place to press her for information. I was just glad that the fight was broken up before it escalated any further.
Same shit as always. Stupid soldiers picking at each other until one of them gets violent. I fucking told Warren to stop pushing Manny's buttons, but he didn't listen and got his ass beat. And my husband can't control himself, she said, sighing, and was still relatively calm, considering what had happened. This is the reality of being married to someone with PTSD. He was never like this when we were young. He always had a temper, but with every deployment, his mind got more fucked up. He goes in and out, in and out. Sometimes I feel like he's slipping away, and I'm afraid he will disappear completely or drink himself to death. I let the vulnerability of her words breathe between us before I responded. The tequila bottle was nearly empty, and all of Gloria's lipstick had faded. Her eyes were bloodshot in the light of the fire burning in front of us. She leaned into me, resting her body against my side. I could feel the relief leave her small frame as her shoulders fell, starting to shake.
Sorry? I'm not usually a crier, she said, wiping at her eyes.
I tightened my arm around her shoulders and used my free hand to press against the base of her neck and gently squeezed her trapezius muscle. It was rock hard, and a moan fell from her lips as I pressed my fingers into it, repeating the motion.
Do you mind? Your shoulders are so tight, I asked her. I couldn't help but notice how badly she needed the relief.
Gloria shook her head, and I stood up, moving behind her to use both of my hands on her shoulders. They seemed to be carrying the world and were resistant to my needing fingers. I felt the tissue separating as Gloria rolled her head back.
When was the last time you had a massage? I asked, after a few minutes of working on her.
I leaned in to see her face. She had stopped crying and seemed to have slipped into the trance that only a massage can bring. It was one of my favorite things about my work, seeing the transformation in my clients' faces when their brows relaxed, their jaws unclenched, their breathing slowed.
Never, she replied, her voice nearly lost over the faint crackling of the wood in the fire.
It was nearly out, and everyone had disappeared into their tents. I wondered where Elodie had gone, and if she had set up a tent for the two of us, but wanted to focus on Gloria, who had helped me settle in and needed someone right now.
You've never had a massage.
She shook her head. And I moved my hands down to her shoulder blades, finding the tight knots and rolling my thumbs over them,
pushing upward. I can't afford massages. I can barely afford groceries most months. I immediately felt like crap for asking such a ridiculous question. As if a mother of three on an army salary could afford the luxury of treating herself to a massage regularly. I knew better, but hated the reality and wished that health insurance covered natural body treatments as freely as they handed out addictive narcotics. Little Manny wants to play soccer next year, and I don't know how we're going to afford it. It's not even like I can work. Childcare is impossibly expensive. It's fucked up, but that's life. We'll make it work. We always do. It made me sick to my stomach that her family had sacrificed so much, and still she had to worry about paying for her son to play a sport. It was wrong and made me enraged for her, for the hundreds of thousands of families who barely got by. Growing up, I had been so spoiled once my dad became an officer. His big house and steady paycheck felt like $1 million to my mom and me in Austin. But the reality for most enlisted soldiers was very different from an officer's family. I'm sorry for asking such a stupid question. Anxiety bubbled in my chest, heavy with guilt. Gloria waved her hands and reached up to touch my hand on her shoulder. Her hands were warm now. Don't worry about it. The free massage is making up for it. I could hear the smile in her voice. You can come to see me at work anytime, and I'll treat you. I know from Kale that you don't often have a sitter, but if you do, I'd love to give you a free massage. Really. You need it, and I appreciate everything you've done for me. She turned her body around to face me, and I couldn't read her expression. I haven't done anything for you. I see why Martin is so in love with you, she said with a laugh. But you shouldn't be too quick to do things for people who are kind in the moment. It stresses me out thinking about how badly people will take advantage of you. Her advice was a bit harsh. My eyes stung a bit, but she did have a point. I wasn't used to people being so blunt, and outside of Elodie, I barely had anyone looking out for me. With the exception of Kale. Take advantage of me. Do you mean like Kale did? I asked Gloria directly, trying to match her confidence and straightforwardness. I wanted to know how much she knew about our situation, or whatever the hell we were. My cheeks burned, wondering what she would think about me hooking up with him less than an hour ago. She shook her head. Nah, not Martin. He can be a fucking idiot, but he loves you. I know you're probably worried as hell about your brother, but... She paused and licked her lips, and I tried to catch my breath. I'm sorry to say this, but sometimes people need the help and structure of the military to get their shit together. I love your brother too, and I know it's scary, Karina, but he will make a good soldier. Her words burned in my chest, but soothed my mind at the same time. I didn't ask for her opinion, and I didn't expect her to know that I was pissed at Kale for helping my brother sign his life away. It was strange how everyone else seemed to be on the same page about my brother enlisting. Did they all know him better than I did? I barely had the bandwidth to process her thoughts about Austin, let alone the fact that she thought Kale loved me. Did he tell her that? Before I could ask her, Kale and Mendoza approached us.
There you two are.
Mendoza's voice sounded like a car that was out of gas. His fiery rage from earlier had completely disappeared, and he looked almost sheepish. He smiled as they got closer. Kale's expression was neutral, as if they had just gone for a casual walk. He was limping slightly as he patted Mendoza's back. I thought about the pile of branches Mendoza had shoved him into and wanted to slap Mendoza for possibly hurting Kale. Even if he was back to himself now, it made me see red. Gloria stood up, and her husband wrapped both of his arms around her body.
I'm sorry, baby. Are you okay?
He asked, his face buried in her thick hair. She pushed at him, but not with enough strength to budge him. You fucking asshole. I told you to stop hitting people.
I know.
Mendoza squeezed a giggle out of Gloria as he lifted her off her feet. When he put her down, she was looking at him like he hung the moon, and he was looking at her like she was every star in the sky. I even started to forgive Mendoza because of the way he was with his wife, so openly and completely in love. They seemed to forget they weren't alone. Or maybe they didn't care. Let's go to bed. Straight to the tent. If you so much as look at Warren or anyone else, I'll bury you in these woods, Gloria threatened. Good night, you two, the Mendozas called back to us as they made their way to their tent, hand in hand. I didn't know how on earth she had gotten used to the chaos. I found it so unsettling, but as Kale's soft eyes met mine, I decided that being around him, even in the midst of all this, would be worth it. Once again, I was in awe of the way he handled everyone, and since he was always looking out for other people, he needed someone to look after him. That someone should be me. Chapter 28. Kale's truck was more than comfortable. Between the heaters, the pile of blankets, and the warmth of his arms around me, I slept like a baby. When the sun came up, I was surprised that I didn't wake up one single time the entire night. I was so comfortable lying on my side in the crook of his shoulder. His arm gently brushed my skin under the t-shirt of his I ended up sleeping in. He was awake when I opened my eyes, but both of us stayed quiet, enjoying the early morning silence. Kale's other hand stroked my hair, and I hugged his body tighter. I'd missed waking up with him more than words could explain. Eventually, the group woke up, and voices got louder. I heard the clanging of what sounded like pots and pans and could smell the fire, then food. The smell of bacon always reminded me of Saturday mornings when my mom was in a good place. She would wake up early, start a pot of coffee, and blast music through the kitchen as she made a complete and utter mess everywhere, from the counter to the sink to the floor. Her attempts at making shapes out of pancakes always failed, but everyone knew that ugly pancakes tasted the best. At least, that's what Austin and I told her. The one thing we hadn't had to lie about was the deliciousness of the pile of bacon, crispy with a paper towel soaking up the grease. My brother and I always started eating it directly from the plate before the rest of the food was done. Everyone in the house, even my father, preferred overcooked bacon. It was quite literally one of the only things all four of us agreed on. My mom's epic and highly secret recipe included sprinkling brown sugar on the meat and putting it in the oven while it was still cold. I was getting hungry thinking about it, and being able to smell the food cooking at the campfire made my stomach growl.
Hungry?
Kale asked, kissing my forehead and hugging my body. I nodded, head buried against his chest. I don't want to get up, but I'm starving, and the smell of bacon is killing me. He rolled onto his back and lifted my chin with his fingers. Last night seemed like such a blur. After the fight happened, we went back to the truck and used our bodies to communicate instead of words. His frustration was clear as he bit at my skin, and I'd felt it melt away as I climbed on top of him, circling my hips until his body tensed, eyes clenched shut, and he came, pressing me against him until his breathing slowed and he fell asleep. I'd counted his breaths, exhausted from the vast range of emotions we had both gone through in just one night, and passed out shortly after.
Let's get some food,
Kale suggested. I lifted my body up and stretched. Muscles I had forgotten existed ached, the good kind of sore. Kale put on the same kind of outfit as he wore yesterday, but in gray. I looked down at his white hoodie in my hands. Will it be weird if I wear this? What if they all notice? The edges of his mouth turned up into a smile.
Who cares? They're all gonna see us walking up together anyway. Unless you wanted to go out there separately and pretend you slept in the woods.
He had a point, and Elodie would definitely ask me where I'd slept since it hadn't been with her. I didn't have any texts or calls from her, so maybe she already knew? Maybe they all already knew?
I began to worry about everyone's perception of me, their potential stares and opinions making my hands ache. I pressed one of my fists together, digging my nails into my palm to distract my mind.
No, no, no.
Kale's voice was soft as he undid my hand. Little moon shapes from my nails were already there.
Hurt me instead, then.
He opened his hand and held his palm up out to me. There wasn't so much as a hint of judgment in his eyes as he held mine. He knew my coping mechanisms better than I did myself, and, as always, he tried to shield me from myself. I lifted his hand and kissed his palm. "Let's go eat," I told him, pulling the hoodie over my head. No one even looked up as we approached the group around the campfire. Gloria was handing out paper plates to the people sitting at the picnic table. There was a pan with enough scrambled eggs to feed an army in the center, a paper plate with fried eggs, another pan of sausage, and a bowl of potatoes, peppers, and onions. It smelled so, so good, and my stomach grumbled as I sat down across from Elodie. Mendoza walked over with another skillet of freshly hot and still popping in the grease bacon and sat it in front of Warren. His jaw was swollen, and he had a blood-stained mark under his bottom lip, but the two of them seemed to be fine now. Next to Warren was my brother, who was unusually quiet as he handed Elodie a bottled water, taking the cap off for her.
"I missed my sous chef," Mendoza told Kale, his mouth full of meat as he spoke.
"Seems like you got along just fine without me."
Kale grabbed a piece of bacon and popped it into his mouth. He sat down next to me and nodded at Elodie, telling her good morning. She smiled, narrowing her eyes as she looked back and forth between me and Kale.
"Good morning, you two," she said through her impossibly huge grin.
She didn't try to hide her smugness or her joy at the conclusion she had obviously come to about us. "Morning." I smiled back, widening my eyes to tell her to shush and that I would explain later.
"Where did you..."
my brother began to ask me, but Elodie's elbow nudged his side and stopped him mid-sentence.
"Ow,"
he whined. I expected him to call us out, but instead, he grabbed the empty plate in front of him and began to shovel eggs onto it.
"What do you want?"
Kale whispered to me, pointing at the food. Gloria carried over a bag of bread and asked which idiot had brought a bag of bread but no toaster. No one confessed, and she said she was going to feed it to the birds.
"Anything,"
I said, eyeing the warm food. The morning air was a bit cold still, and steam rose from the table as everyone began to eat. "Except the bacon," I added, noticing that Austin also left out the bacon since it was soft. Elodie seemed to love it. She barely finished chewing a piece before she put another in her mouth. As I ate my eggs, I looked around at the group again. Everyone was getting along, talking about some sports team and planning a group outing to a football game in Atlanta. Hearing about Atlanta made me remember that Kale and I still had so much unfinished business to talk about. What did our hookup mean for us? He had his hand on my thigh under the table and had barely taken his eyes off me since we sat down, so clearly things had changed. But what did that mean for his plans to go to Atlanta? I tried to distract myself from worrying about the future or the past, and only focus on how steady and warm his touch was, how beautiful his eyes were when the sun shined across them, turning them from rich midnight to golden flaked espresso.
"Happy birthday to you! Happy birthday to you!"
rang out around me, and I looked up to see Gloria carrying a sheet cake toward the table. It had a row of lit candles, their small flames wavering as she sat it on the table directly between my brother and me. "Happy birthday, dear Fisher," everyone sang. Elodie, Kale, and a few others I didn't see, adding, "and Karina." Kale clapped his hands as everyone cheered for us. I felt a little embarrassed by the attention, but realized this was the first time in my life I'd had a group of friends sing happy birthday to me. For our entire lives, our birthday always felt like Austin's birthday. But today, even though these were his friends, I didn't feel like an afterthought as I blew out the candles. Gloria's arms wrapped around my shoulders from behind and she kissed my cheek.
Happy birthday, Karina. I'm so glad you're here, she said into my ear. I almost burst into tears as Elodie jumped up and hugged me too. I wasn't used to this much affection, and I was worried what would happen if I let myself get too used to it. Chapter 29. I told Austin I would go to dinner, even though I didn't really want to be around my dad or Estelle, like, at all. I was going out of pure guilt piled on by others, and the fact that my brother might not be around for any more birthday dinners together. As much as I didn't want to be there, I needed to do it for him. We were twins, after all. The preciseness of the dinner hour was hanging over my head. In the past, it always bothered me that the time couldn't be changed, that I couldn't just cancel, but I never did anything about that. It was just something that had to be done, and I'd accepted it. But skipping these last few weeks felt like a good change, like a power stance that I was taking against my dad and the very particular order he forced onto my life. He was damn lucky that I was even going to his house after what happened the last time I saw him. If I had it my way, I would choose to avoid him as long as I could, mandatory family gatherings and funerals being the exception. If they have any leftover sweets, will you bring me some? Elodie asked me, as I attempted to pull my sweater over my head and slip my feet into my shoes at the same time. I refused to dress up tonight and wore a Harvard sweatshirt I'd bought at H&M to try to recreate Princess Diana's casual street style. It didn't look anything on me like it did on her, but paired with black knee-length shorts and dirty sneakers, it was comfy and would do the trick of annoying my dad and making Estelle cringe. I promised to bring Elodie back a snack as she lay down on the couch and blew me a kiss. I rushed out of the door and started down the steps, but turned around and used my key to lock the door. Kale's constant reminders were finally working. I missed Kale, even though it had only been 2 days since I saw him last. We texted a lot, but I was practically working from open to close, and he was busy with discharge meetings that would take up most of the week. Today, I barely made it off work in time to shower before the approaching hell of a dinner at my father's house. I played a random playlist on Spotify that was named Studying When You're Miserable But Don't Want to Fail. The title drew me in, and the slow, folksy instrumentals worked, making me focus only on the drive, and not on my anger toward my father. My dad's house was the same as it had always been. The same overdone landscaping with random little trees and mismatched flowers planted by Estelle out of boredom, yet never maintained. The same flags flying high on the pole. The same driveway that made my mind race with last-ditch excuses to not go inside. I slapped my hands against my cheeks gently, enough to bring some color to my drained face. I had to stop letting this house and its inhabitants demoralize me. I didn't know exactly how to do that, but I had to figure it out or my dad would ruin my life like he had my mother's. Everything in my life was changing. My brother was leaving. Elodie's due date was creeping closer each week. Kale and I were attempting to restart our... I couldn't finish the sentence. I didn't know why it was so hard for me to just call it a relationship, but we hadn't had the official talk yet. So for now, it didn't need a label. With so much change as of late, I hoped the intimidating dynamic of dinner with my father would also change for the better. As much as I kept preaching to myself about change, 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 there I was, right back at Tuesday night dinners. Everything inside their house was predictable. Though Estelle had replaced a few things over the last couple years to bond herself to the house and settle into her new last name, the house was mostly full of the furniture my mom and dad had collected over their life together. Old picture frames that my mom had bought were now occupied by his new wife's face. I had never really thought about how much of my mom was left in that house, but as I got out of my car, I wondered how Estelle felt about being surrounded by my mom's ghost, or if she even thought about it that way at all. As if they were moved by an actual ghost, the front curtains drew back to reveal my dad, standing there watching me. Austin was next to him, his shadow much more imposing than my dad's. Austin waved and my dad said something to him, making him smile. It was almost eerie to see them together, both smiling from the window. Austin looked so much like my dad right then that I had to look away or I would bolt back to my car and take off. I would bet they were bonding over Austin's recent enlistment. I wondered when my dad had found out, and I hated how happy he probably was that my brother was following in his footsteps. I could gag. I walked across the grass, and when I got to the door, Austin was there waiting, wearing a white Nike hoodie and sweats. Immediately, I knew they were Cale's. I had taken a shower after work, but refused to go the whole 9 yards of blow-drying or applying mascara or foundation. I twisted my wet hair into a claw clip and put some moisturizer on. I wanted my outfit to bother my dad, but even he was dressed in more casual clothes, wearing loose-fitting blue jeans and a burnt orange t-shirt. Was I in Bizarro World? Estelle and her usual dress or cashmere would be my last hope to look underdressed. Yo! Austin threw his arm over my shoulder and hugged me as soon as I stepped into the house. He smelled like a fresh sip of beer and faint cologne. His eyes were bright, no circles under them, no blotchy hangover spots on his cheeks or neck. Whatever the hell Cale had been doing with him was working. Lately, my brother had been looking better than I had ever seen him. My heart began to swell until my dad's voice sounded out, the same old gray concrete it had always been.
Karina, I'm glad you could make it.
Like I had a choice, really, I said into my brother's neck.
Be nice,
he replied under his breath. Hearing loud cheering from the TV, my father turned and pointed, his hand on my brother's shoulder as I tried to unwrap myself from his embrace.
Ah, look, they scored.
Since when are you into sports again? I whispered to my brother, who was still hugging me to him.
Since now, he shrugged. Glad you came.
Austin finally let me go, and I checked the time on my phone. I'd only been there for 2 minutes. It was going to be a long night, especially with everyone acting like nothing had happened. The elephant in the room. I followed behind them and stood next to the couch, staring absentmindedly at the men knocking into one another on the TV.
Care, come in and get settled,
my dad said.
You act like you didn't grow up in this house.
I didn't grow up here, I reminded him, but walked farther into the living room nonetheless. He didn't reply, but I could tell by the look he gave me that it pained him not to snap back at me. I wondered how long it would take for one of us to bring up what had happened between me, my dad, and Cale. I didn't know how long I could just pretend like we hadn't had a massive blow-up and hadn't spoken in weeks. The anger inside of me mixed with the crunching sound of football pads on the television made my head hurt. I looked for the remote to turn it down a bit, but it was sticking out of my dad's front jeans pocket. During my childhood, my dad always held onto the remote, literally, when a game was on. It drove my mother mad, so mad that once she grabbed one of his shiny golf clubs and smashed it into the brand new TV we'd bought during tax season. Both of our parents' screams filled the air as Austin and I ran down the porch and to the park at the end of our block. Austin dangled upside down on the monkey bars, and I sat in the mulch, picking up handfuls and throwing it as we debated which one of our parents would win the fight that day. By the time we got home, my dad was in their bedroom and our mom was asleep on the front porch swing, an empty bottle of wine on the steps. Years later, these types of memories still freshly echoed in my mind as if they had occurred recently. So much so that as I stood in front of my father's blaring TV, I could hear the sound of the creaking metal chains of the porch swing. I wished I could afford to go to therapy again, but now that I was turning 21, my health insurance from my dad's retirement was about to disappear, so there was really no chance. As Austin and my father chummed it up like old pals, I considered telling my dad I would send him the bill for my much-needed therapy. I wondered if, deep down, he thought he had lived his life the way he should have and had done right by his children, or if he even gave a shit. It had always seemed like his career and reputation mattered more than anything else in the world. I had never seen my brother and father this way. They were usually at each other's throats or making awkward small talk that Austin would later complain about. Our father had never been affectionate with either of us, purposely keeping his physical distance as long as I could remember. And this evening, neither of them had mentioned the thing that had to be bringing them together, which was my brother following in his footsteps and enlisting. I wondered when Austin might have told him, how he'd reacted, if Estelle had smiled along, proud of Austin for the first time since she'd met him. On cue, Estelle walked into the living room to bring my dad a beer and stopped to say hi to me. She seemed different tonight, maybe because it had been a while since I'd last seen her. Something about her looked more fresh than usual, and she barely had any makeup on. She was wearing a long-sleeved linen shirt that was something between beige and gray, and her hair was tied back in a ponytail. Was it casual Tuesday for everyone and I just didn't get the Fisher family memo? You look gorgeous, she said. So stylish. Reminds me of when I was in my 20s. Thanks, I told her, trying not to sound as startled as I was. Her face was sincere, even though I was basically wearing pajamas to the family dinner. I like your hair like that, too. It really brings out your eyes, she added. She reached to touch my hair, and I jerked away, but didn't exactly mean to. She looked at me, not able to hide the hurt on her face, and I lamely apologized with a small smile. I didn't mean to hurt her feelings. She was the least of the villains in the house at the moment, but that didn't mean I wanted her to touch me or caress my hair. Would you like some wine? She asked me, her expression back to one of a smiling, pleasant host. I nodded, even though I wasn't in the mood to drink, but I wanted to accept at least one thing from her after rejecting her. She smiled a little, keeping it a beat too long to not be fake, and that just made me feel more awkward. Her eyes were on me. They were one of her best features, but they always gave her emotions away. They were the color of warm honey, set deep in her face, with long, dark lashes fanning against her cheeks. My brother's gross friends always said how hot she was. Austin hated the hot stepmom jokes, but I'm sure my dad loved having a beautiful wife dangling from his arm. While my mom was a stunning, energetic woman whose spirit just jumped out at you, I had never seen my dad parade my mom around like he did Estelle in her pencil skirts and tight dresses. Strangely, I wished I could stop judging Estelle so harshly. I hated the way it made me feel to think so negatively about anyone, especially as she stood there with a defeated expression, trying to get along with me while knowing I had never accepted or liked her. The men in the house continued to ignore me, and to break the tense energy with Estelle, I followed her into the kitchen when she went to get my wine. She didn't need to wait on me the way she did my dad. Their house had a lot of rooms, but they were all shoved together. There were so many things hung on the walls, his awards, mass-printed paintings of flowers, old family photos. It made me laugh that one of the frames still had the stock photo of a random family in a field inside. It would never be filled the way Estelle wanted, with a photo of the four of us. Or maybe she didn't give a shit and just liked the frame. The kitchen had a slight theme. White plaster bowls full of fruit, bread loaves half eaten and their bags half full, twirled and clamped shut with mismatching clips. The clutter and wall art made the house feel like it was closing in on me. The decorations were mostly tones of brown. A big cabinet that had belonged to my grandma on my dad's side was full of trinkets scattered around the shelves, neat enough to look decorated, but still cluttered. I recognized them all. They had been with my dad long before Estelle came into the picture. I was no Joanna Gaines, but if I had the kind of money my dad did, I would update my home with new things that made me happy, not just wives. I wouldn't keep decades of memories only because I didn't feel like bothering with moving them. On the kitchen wall, near the fridge, there was a painting of a comet flying through a dark, starry sky that my mom got at a garage sale when I was a kid. It followed us from house to house, kitchen to kitchen. Estelle, standing in front of it as she uncorked a bottle of red wine, felt wrong, but again, it was my dad's fault, not hers. She probably didn't even know that it had belonged to my mom. I watched Estelle pour the wine slowly, as if she was lost in thought the same way I was. I politely took my glass of wine and slipped into the dining room. My head was spinning as I took a deep breath and tried to stop thinking about my mom. In the next room, Austin and my dad talked loudly about the game. I guessed my father and brother's relationship had changed recently. I'd assumed that Austin hadn't been here, but it was becoming clear that he had. Long enough for them to become best buds. It made me envious that no matter what my brother did, my dad was proud. Even when Austin got steady C's his entire academic career, as long as he was still playing football, he was a star student in my father's eyes. Austin, with his average grades, got more praise and shoulder pats than I ever did. His favorite dinners made, trips to Dallas to see the Cowboys play in person. And now that he was going to be a soldier, my dad must have been over the moon. No matter how many A's I got, or how many science fairs or spelling bees I participated in, my dad either didn't notice or didn't care. I used to daydream of devising plans to get my father's attention and approval, like running away or smoking a stolen cigarette in the house, just to have my dad notice. Being yelled at was better than being ignored. It only got worse after Mom left. At least she would cheer for me when I brought home a good report card or finished a project. When she was mentally present, she made me feel seen. But as I got older, those times were few and far between.
"That's a goal! Hell yes!"
my dad shouted from the other room, pouring salt in my wound. I continued to reminisce about the unfairness of how my dad treated my brother. In my memory, I could hear my dad telling Austin he was destined to play sports at a state college and would really make something of himself. Not once had my dad ever asked me what I wanted to do in the future, let alone encouraged me. My mom told me once, with vodka on her breath, that my dad wished I were a boy. Once the words were out, she covered her mouth and tried to take it back, but I would always remember the honesty in her voice when she said it. Now that I was more grown up, I was beginning to realize that my dad had issues with women in general, and not just the perpetual disappointment directed at my mother and me. I pulled out my phone, about to text Kale to complain about all of them, to bitch about Estelle's awkwardness and how my brother did virtually nothing and was still the golden child, to ask him what he knew about my dad's awareness of Austin's enlistment. I was so relieved that things had changed between Kale and me. Even though our future was unclear, I was okay with that. For now, at least. I had gone from a brand new Instagram quote-loving girl who didn't pine over stupid soldiers with trust issues to hooking up with Kale in the back of his truck in the middle of the woods and then missing him every second he wasn't by my side. I wanted him to be the first to text me tonight, but I knew he was busy. So instead of complaining to him, I swiped out of my text messages and tapped on the Instagram icon. I had a lot of notifications again. The market cactus and the purple chair picture were still the most popular out of my tiny grid, and my followers were growing daily. Strangers were commenting for me to post more often, asking me where the chair was from and how much I would sell it for. The internet was so strange. As Estelle brought in food from the kitchen into the dining room, I asked if she needed my help, but she politely declined. Each dish she carried in looked and smelled so good, and I was suddenly starving. Austin and my dad finally waltzed in as Estelle sat her gravy boat in front of me, still oblivious that its origin was offensive. I pushed it away, toward the center of the table, and made a mental note to accidentally break it someday soon. Austin plopped down across from me, and my dad took his usual seat as head of the table. Estelle began to busy herself with carving the chicken, something my dad used to do for my mom, who would get grossed out and become a vegetarian for a week whenever she attempted to carve any type of meat. Estelle didn't seem to mind as she skillfully and silently sliced through the crispy skin, the smell of lemon and pepper rising with the steam from the dish. Since no one was talking and I didn't care about manners or etiquette today, I continued scrolling on my phone. I tapped on my photo icon and looked through the album, wishing I took more pictures of my experiences in general, and not just because of Instagram. I only had two random pictures from the camping trip, one of the fire and one of a yummy breakfast. I should have taken some snapshots of Gloria, of Elodie, of Kale, and my brother with our joint birthday cake. Family dinner began and continued around me. No one said much or seemed to care that I was completely checked out for most of it. My dad